Well, good morning, everyone. Today is Friday, and our second full day of session. And well, welcome to the folks who've joined us from far afield. And there's a couple more will be coming in today. I think Andrew Morrison's going to be coming up probably just for the afternoon, and then Tom Mars will be coming, I think, Friday, and it should be us for the weekend, and then Miriam, you'll probably be going tomorrow, depending on the weather, dependent on the weather. Great. So, so the second day of session, if you've been here from the beginning, then you're starting to feel the effects of the silence and the consistent sitting. And if you've just arrived too, then you'll be hooking into that as well. There's a palpable energy that a whole bunch of people getting together in a common pursuit brings up. And it's something you don't realise so much when you're kind of in it. But you certainly feel it after you come out. And again, those containers that the container that we set for session with the silence and the attention and the awareness and the form assists us in that, bringing our mind to this experience. And it's funny, you know, when you come to practice like Buddhism and have read about it and all these kinds of things, it's the, I kind of reflect on my own experience too, is that the in a sense we really come to it with a certain sense of otherness about it. Otherness meaning that there's always something that we want to get out of it. That's fair enough, I guess. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here at all, and there may be a certainly for myself a very strong sense of striving to achieve something, and depending on how your mind is structured, when you read all the koans and the stories of the Buddha and all that kind of thing, then that seems very clear that all these old worthies strived and cut off their arms and stood in snowstorms and did all this kind of stuff to achieve great enlightenment, whatever that is. And if you read some of the more recent commentaries, the ones that are maybe slightly more popular in the West, then there's that certain sense of striving is held up. And yet that's kind of one reading to it, but then if you have a read in another way, there's always that gentle or strong insistence that this basic experience is whole and complete, as I was talking yesterday, might about to be visited by a wet dog, careful. And it's an interesting conflict or tension between those two. And Dogen Zenji, when he one of his early questions was, you know, if we are perfect and complete just as we are, why have all the worthies in the past, you know, struggled to realize it? And that's really our question too. You know, if you come to session and you just sit in some kind of reclining pose, and you can, you know, dream 3 or 4 days away, And it's okay, you know, afterwards you feel like you've been through it. Sean might need to go outside with the ball. That's right, Joe. <true. laughs> Asking for trouble. So that is the tension. So the and I was reflecting yesterday that there's this phrase, you know, just this, and I kind of mentioned this yesterday, and so it's just read through all the stories and all the koans there, and they're all about pointing us to this direct experience, you know. And then we think about what is this experience. You say, well, it's just this. You know, it's the dog coming in, it's the pain in the leg, it's the when's lunch. And so that's one aspect we become confused about there. But it's also this justness. And just meaning only, or this is all there is. And that's probably the harder one to appreciate. So if we're carrying around, I just noticed as I was doing Kenhin, that, you know, we can carry around this edge of there being something else, something, if only I fill in the gap, whatever that is, then my life will be complete. And it can be subtle, or it can be large. You know, so it's almost like you're living this life, like this, and there's this kind of parallel life. It's either way over there, or it's just there, and you're just trying to get there, because it would be okay if I got there. Maybe just the next step of Kenhin, and I'll see it. You know. And it's really interesting, because that's... And that, in some sense, it gives us struggle and pain, and we recognise that we feel there's a gap, and kind of intuit and believe that there's a gap, and we try and close that gap, and that's what practice is about, trying to close that gap. It's the koan, it's the gassho, we bring those hands together. And yet, you know, you can struggle for years with this, and they say with the Buddha, they say he's still in the Tusita heavens practicing, and he's only halfway there. Oh, bugger. There's a nice little koan that illustrates that kind of subtle sense of lack that we have, and it's the case 38, the Mumankan. It's called Utsu's Buffalo Passes Through the Window. In Japanese, he's called Goso. So Utsu said, "It is like a buffalo that passes through a latticed window. Its head, horns, and four legs all pass through. Why can't its tail pass through as well?" A commentary: If you can get upside down with this one, discern it clearly and give a tuning word to it, then you can meet the four obligations above and give comfort to the three existences below. But if it is not yet clear, pay close attention to the tail, and you will resolve it at last. The verse, passing completely through, you fall in a ditch. Turning beyond, all is lost. This tiny little tail, what a wonderful thing it is. So, I guess the story around this is like the buffalo, like the water buffalo in Southeast Asia is, you know, it's one of those big, really big, strong animals with the curly horns, and it is a very, very important part of village life. It hauls the plow, and and I'm not sure if it provides meat, but you know, it provides milk, and And so it's in the lattice window, as if this buffalo is in the, in its stall, and the lattice window, you know, they're kind of crossed like that. And this buffalo is really big, and it's got big horns and big head. And so the koan says, this buffalo has kind of passed through this lattice window. It's kind of like a camel going through the eye of the needle. It kind of seems an impossibility. And yet the koan pretty much says, well, that is the case. You know, that it's like a buffalo that passes through a latticed window. You know, its head, horns, and forelegs all pass through. And they're big, you know, it's really big through this really small hole. And then, but its tail can't get through. And its tail is, you know, I think it's got a little tuft on the end. And its tail can't get through. Seems kind of wacky. But it's like it's normally like your life is like, that's what it means. And you know, the buffalo in a sense is talking about our essential nature, or our, what do we say, essential nature. It's our experience of this experience that we're having right now. It's passed through the lattice window is I guess it's kind of, you kind of got past all these kind of complications and this and that and up and down and woe is me and all that kind of stuff is passed through the lattice window and is enjoying the realm of frolic and play and non-fixedness and self-concern, non-self-concern. And so in a sense, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, and just can't get that tail through. So and it's not really, one way you can say, translate this as saying, well, it's like if you've been, you know, practicing for 30 years and you've attained, you know, great realization or it's all seen, had breakthroughs or whatever it is, and you still can't, you know, get over to see the heaven. Yeah, it's kind of one way of looking at it, but the real koan aspect is that the having got through, that's the fact of your life. And it's something we appreciate intellectually, you know, that you know, when we smell what we smell. And we see what we see. It's how could you not? And when thoughts come, the thoughts, that's what you're thinking. You know, all your kind of six senses are pure and clear. There's nothing missing. You know, you just, when someone hits you on the head, ow, you get hurt. You know, there's nothing missing. Well, that's your life, never has been. So that's passing through the window, is that direct experience, verifying it, and we verify it every moment. But this tail, there's something else that just can't get through. And that's that thing to a certain sense, like for us, it's like that other life. We can't quite get to nirvana. No matter how hard we try. In the koan it says, this tail, what a wonderful thing it is. That you can't get there. In the poem it says, passing through, you fall in a ditch. This big, dark, smelly ditch. So you got through, you fall into this big ditch. And you went back the other way. As you say, there's turning beyond or turning back, all is lost. You're totally rooted. So it's funny, when we examine our lives and when we come to Sesshin, we really are examining our lives, examining our experience. That this thing is, there's something unattained, something ungraspable, something that can't be pinned down or controlled. It's like trying to bob for apples. You know, like when you try and focus in on your breath or the koan, it's like, you can never quite get it. The wonderful thing about practice is that, you know, we're asked that you don't just do it and that's it and it's all done. But, you know, you come along and you sit again and again and again and again and again, and after a while, there's that story of Bodhidharma and Ekka. You know, Ekka stands in the snow for however long, and Bodhidharma says, bring me your mind, and he says, well, I can't, I've searched for my mind, and it's finally ungraspable. That kind of realization that it's not that I can't grasp it. Oh, I could if I really worked hard. It's just that it's, the fact of the matter is it can't be grasped. It's not a graspy thing. So what that tale kind of points, kind of the question that comes up is like, that tale is a fact. You know, it's an absolute fact of our lives that sense of lack, that incompleteness is, so the question would be is like, especially in Sushin, is that what we're experiencing? You know, is that your experience? Is that part of your experience? You know, that gap. And I said, this tale, what a wonderful thing. This gap, this sense of, I can't do it. You know, what a wonderful thing. So there's always, you know, in the Dogen's writings about the monastery, Ahaji, where they're, and I guess all the Zen monasteries with got the rice in from the fields, and you always have to sieve the rice from the grit, and the grit from the rice, because that's the fact of you're eating, you know, rice, and you ever had that? Very unpleasant. Or thorns in the mud is another one. It's like if you're, you know, wandering barefoot through the fields, or suddenly experience something you don't expect to be there. Or it rains, you know, when you plan to picnic. You know, your kids won't behave or go to bed. And you want them to, which is a lot. And so there's always something, it's like when you think about your perfect life, is that perfect life which we kind of dream about and think we will attain to some place has never, ever happened. There's a story about Gu Jeff, who he's Russian, I think? Eastern teacher. They had that thing called the work, and so the community used to do a lot of work, a lot of practice was around work practice, and so that was the way about losing the self. And sorry, one of his communities, that there was someone there who was just an absolute pain in the butt. Everybody hated him. It's just like, and you work in that tight environment, it just, so, and in the end the community very strongly suggested to him that he better leave or it'll be all over. So he left. And then Gurdjieff comes in the next morning and notices someone's missing. Who is this guy? So we had to tell him to go. He was just screwing things up. So Gurdjieff secretly races down the road, catches the guy up. He says, you've got to come back. You've got to come back. You can't leave the community. He says, no way am I going back there. And so in the end, Gurdjieff offers him money and pays him to come back and be part of the community. And why? You know, there's a certain sense of that if everything is straightforward and easy, then we kind of lose that edge. You know, there's all those examples of like the coyote, or trickster, or the joker, or the jester, who hangs around the king, and kind of can say whatever he likes, because he's that aspect of personality that isn't going to be tied down, that isn't going to conform to a certain way. You know, it's unresolved, it's alive, it's awake, and unsatisfactory. Really unsatisfactory. But what its function is that it shows up our expectations of the way we think life should be. It's like that kind of mirror that shows up. Without that, then we tend to think that, or we tend to accept that there is a perfect world. There is a nirvana that excludes pain, weird shit. No, I was raised Catholic, and we had that wonderful sacrament of reconciliation, which in the old days you'd go into the booth and the slide would come back and you'd talk to the priest behind the lattice window, actually. And these days, I think there was some, I'm not sure, I haven't done any practicing for a while, but then at some point, I guess after, there was a change in the structure, and then it was kind of face to face with the priest, which was a little daunting, you know. Like talking to an old friend, which changed the dynamic quite a bit, but there was that feeling there that you could say, well, all your sins and misdeeds, and they would be wiped clean, or better sense, kind of accepted. And I guess it's one thing I appreciate about the Catholic Church. It's been around for so long. It's kind of like whatever. It's seen everything, whereas some of the newer churches tend to be, and maybe Buddhism in the West too, there's kind of that certain kind of, we'll just take this part. But that ability to embrace the whole experience. So, yeah, so this tale, and again, we come to Sesshin, and we're really trying to get that tale through. We can't push in and pulling and shoving and get that whole beast through. Ooh. So, well, lately one of my daughters, Michelle Mandamus, is she's 8, so it'd be one of two. she's really starting to express herself, I guess, quite strongly. The kind of personality is developing, and she's getting smart as in like the words are starting to come, and the rational discrimination is starting to come. And And it won't be long before I'd say 2 years, and she'll be able to beat me and Claudia in kind of the rational reasons as to why we should be going to bed. I mean, it's already almost there. And I kind of realise that I'm on a losing battle here. So I'm kind of pulling back thinking, okay, what am I really trying to teach as a parent? And, because when you can't, it's like my views are not going to be her views, and I figure that the main thing I can teach her is how to be polite when negotiating, which I think is a very valuable skill to have, because we can withhold privileges, I guess, but and it's interesting because you get to that thing of some of that conflict where you're both kind of, you're staring each other down, and depending on how I'm feeling, will either put her in her room, yell at her, sulk, or she'll sulk, and none of those are great outcomes, you know. And but if I've got the, I guess the space, there's that sense of that I can actually go up and give her a hug, you know, that kind of thing. Not in a kind of a soppy way, but that kind of like, you're kind of dropping that thing. And I have to drop it. I have to drop what I'm carrying. And then you forget about it. It's like, what? I don't know what we're arguing about. And it may come up again in 2 minutes. But there is that, you know, that sense of that you can embrace those little things, those niggles that come up. And they're not going to go away or transform. The actual sense your relationship to them may transform, you know, but you can guarantee they're not going to disappear. You know, and so, you know, children and relationships and those situations are really endless. And the practice really is to recognize them as not other, not something else. You need to recognize them as mu, you know, as your direct experience, nothing outside of it. You know, so and that whole dance, it is the practice. You know, it's that practice of this too. The story about Maura O'Halloran, who was an Irish woman, quite young, was killed quite young, unfortunately, in a car accident in Thailand, I think. But she trained in Japan, a teacher, I don't know his whole name, but Bang is one of his names, and she had an awakening, and then she really kind of relates the story with the teacher, and it's just one of the lines is like, he asks her about, so even the shit in the hole, Maura. He says, even the shit in the hole, Roshi. And the toilets are not as good as ours, you know. Yeah. So we recently went to Japan, which is a wonderful experience, and over there for this like really long non-Christian history, and basically didn't accept Christianity when it came. Now it's maybe 2% Christian, so it's one of these where they're quite satisfied with their own thing, and so the Shinto is the predominant, I guess, kind of way of being. It's not, in a sense, kind of that sense of the separation between religion and daily life isn't as marked as it is here. So, when Buddhism came, that what's that word? Syncretization, or whatever it is, syncretized a lot of the deities into Buddhist forms. You know, which is, you know, a wonderful kind of natural way of appreciating that, you know, these forms are always there, and as Buddha or as Shinto, you know, they're never apart from that. And so there are all these. We did this walk for a couple of days through the this pilgrimage trail and through the woods. And you come across all these shrines everywhere, you know, like in the middle of the forest there'd be a shrine and various deities and shrine there, and to wash water and flags, and some are really kind of run down, or little jizos which are totally covered in moss, and it's that kind of sense of just, it's all part of a piece. And in all things, I guess, appearing as either gods or demons or emotions or fear or joy. And all those kind of little edges, all lighting up the world and giving it definition. And again, this is that tale. This is the thing that doesn't get through the lattice window. Let's finish with the poem here from Jorge Luis Borges, who's an Argentinian poet, writer. This one's called Shinto. Says, when sorrow lays us low for a second, we are saved by humble windfalls of mindfulness or memory. The taste of a fruit, the taste of water, that face given back to us by a dream, the first jasmine of November, the endless yearning of the compass, a book we thought was lost, the throb of a hexameter, the slight key that opens a house to us, the smell of a library or of sandalwood, the former name of a street, the colours of a map, an unforeseen etymology, the smoothness of a filed fingernail, the date we were looking for, the 12 dark bell strokes tolling as we count them, a sudden physical pain. 8 million Shinto deities travel secretly throughout the earth. These modest gods touch us, and move on. So, you know, all those little aspects of our lives, that's what we're talking about with this tale. You know, that stuff that won't move through. So for the next couple of days, I guess our work, our practice is that when, you know, something comes up that would appear to be a barrier, something that prevents us from reaching the other shore, or whatever it is to embrace that, you know, that experience. You know, that the tale, you know, what a wonderful thing. And it's like that sense of, when I say embrace, it's like really is that sense of that faith, developing that faith, that, you know, that particular experience that you recognize as being troublesome as part of the whole, you know, part of you. Your whole experience. And that gives you a very different kind of understanding. You won't put an end to all this kind of stuff that happens inside yourself and the world. You know. But you can totally change your relationship to it. Okay, let's finish.